Raised Rowdy.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
And welcome to our podcast, our esteemed guest, Liam St. John. Welcome, buddy.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, good meeting you. This is really cool. First pod of the year.
Yeah. Welcome to 2026.
Yeah, it's the year of the horse. Let's go.
It is. Yeah, I just saw that Oris watch that drop. That's like, yeah, but that thing looks sick, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not a watch podcast. music podcast. How was your 2025? Seemed like you had a pretty great year, man.
I mean, it was the best year of my life so far. It's been a lot of, behind the scenes grinding for a long time and finally starting to see the fruit of it all. So had a really good time and did some bucket list things.
Yeah. And put out probably, in my opinion, the best music of your career also, right?
Absolutely.
With the Man of the North record.
Yeah, I'm so proud of that. It's been accumulation, you know, my whole life just living life, and then the last 4 years been writing those songs. So
that's so cool. It is, like, if you listen to the earlier music and then take it to, like, where you're at now, you can absolutely, like, hear the development of your sound and, like, I guess, like, figuring out, like, exactly what you want to say in it too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's been a process ever since I wrote Dipped in Bleach. That was a song that really, like, started the growth of my career and also the growth of me as a songwriter. It was, like, the first song I really went there with vulnerability and honesty. And
extremely honest, yeah.
And that's the journey of the Man of the North album, is just trying to be as honest and vulnerable as I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that.
Well, you mentioned doing some bucket list stuff. What were some bucket list things in 2025 that you did?
Well, I made my Grand Ole Opry debut in November.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. That was kind of unexpected. I mean, it was incredible news, because we were in our van and trailer, you know, road dogging, and my label called me and he was like, did you talk to your management today? And I was like, yeah. Because we just got news that we're going to be on the Kelly Clarkson show. And I was like,
which I saw that as well. Very cool.
I was like, yeah, I'm so stoked. And then he's like, did they tell you anything else? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, you have an open offer to the Grand Ole Opry. I was like, what? Freaked out. Everybody in the van was like, what's going on? So it was a really cool, special moment.
That's so cool. I mean, national television. So
yeah.
Grand Ole Opry. And then got to release a record that you're extremely proud of. Like, that's a freaking great year right there.
I remember the first time I played the Grand Ole Opry, I was playing pedal steel guitar. And I went back and watched the performance. I was scared shitless. I don't know if you were.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I played well. Like, I played in tune and it was fine. But I could hear my vibrato was different because my hands were so shaky. Yeah. You could hear it on the bar. What were your nerves like doing that?
It was, it went by so fast, but everybody was so kind.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody there was, they know how special that first time is. Mm-hmm. And even Charlie McCoy, you know, this legendary harmonica player, came up to me right before I went out, gave me some advice, and I was like, what the fuck?
This
is crazy. But yeah, I mean, I was able to sing, but I was shaking and crying. Like, every time I tried to talk, I started crying.
The crowd eats that up though, there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But yeah, it was cool. I mean, I was just really, you know, my head's been down for the last 10 years just grinding, and it was like a moment where you could just look up, and that's one of the coolest places to have a moment like that. So it was really special. And my mom was there, so that meant a lot to me. So
mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's so cool, like, hearing the Opry story, and I'm sure there's plenty of moments where you get time to reflect, but it seems like that's an opportunity that a lot of people, like, really, like, get to say, wow.
Yeah. I think it's one of those moments you can't deny, like, the payoff of the hard work. And so,
yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of cool moments like that this year.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
For me, like, I grew up, like, I wasn't like a country music listener growing up. And I didn't know what the Opry was. You know, like, when I moved to Nashville, you know, it was like Jason Aldean was really popular and Luke Bryan. Well, I didn't know who those guys were. I didn't know who Carrie Underwood or whatever it was. And then it was like when I moved to town and I thought I was going to play bluegrass music. And it was just like the Opry wasn't like kind of on my radar. And then the more I like got into country music, and I knew like some of the older stuff, and but I didn't know like Keith Whitley or anything like that. And then just the more time I spend around the genre, like the more appreciation I have for that institution. Yeah. And the first time I ever went to one, I was driving like, oh, we're going to go to the, you know, you think like, oh, Minnie Pearl, and you think Hank Williams and blah, blah, blah. And then I drive to Opry Mills and I'm like, it's in a mall, you know, I'm like, this is weird. And then when you go into that room and like, you just, it sounds so, and then you're like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's so special in there.
Yeah.
And then to get to play it is such a huge honor, you know?
Yeah.
Is there anything that's like that in like other music, like rock and roll? Is there anything like that in rock?
Well,
dang, that's a good question.
I feel like there's venues.
Yeah.
Like, I just played the Troubadour, which was one of my bucket list things I did this year.
Yeah.
I think there are venues that have helped, you know, build the legend of rock and roll and, you know,
yeah,
stuff like that. But, I don't know about
like institution wise.
Yeah.
Kind of that feeling. 'Cause that's the thing with the Opry is it almost feels like more of an experience than it even is like a venue. Like, I feel like they could put the Opry, they do, they put it in the Ryman and then they put it in the Opry House and a relatively similar experience, you know, just steeped in the tradition of what the people that have came before and kind of how much commitment it takes to be a member. And I think all of that's kind of a part of what they've built. You
yeah,
know?
It's
a, I don't, in my head, maybe I don't know enough about rock or rap or other genres to know like if there is something that's like that, but it just seems so special.
I think rock is maybe, you know, it's not just located like around one city, you know what I mean? Because it's like New York and LA and London and blah, blah, blah. So there's not as easy to have as tight knit of a community like there is in country music maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm like thinking like CBGBs or something, which obviously isn't around anymore, but that's like punk rock. And then there's, you know what I mean? So maybe not. But congrats on getting to do that. I know that's crazy.
And speaking of, like, we just talked about that. It's like sometimes in the music world, it's like where you get to record stuff or how you record stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, is like, can you tell us a little bit about the recording process of what you guys did for the record?
Yeah, well, I worked with my good friend Johnny Black. And
such a cool name.
Yeah. He's awesome. He's up for a blues Grammy this year.
That's amazing.
But yeah, it was amazing working with him. We started out as just co-writers, and then he just understood the dynamics of my influence from, you know, Johnny Cash to, you know, straight up rock and roll. And so I thought it was a perfect match. And then we went to Blue Room Studios on East Iris, and Charles Yingley was the engineer. And it was a really small group, and we hired, just, you know, Fred Elteringham was the drummer, and all these Nashville cats. Mark Rogers was bass, and Rob McNally was playing guitar.
Yeah, they're the cats.
Yeah,
got a fiddle player and
all the
folks.
Yeah, yeah, but
Molly Tuttle and
Molly Tuttle, man, that was a dream. But
it's crazy too.
It was really important to me, you know. I had the strip back stuff, and that really changed my life. And I wanted it to be an evolution of that. Like, what was so special about that was it was my first album that was like lyrically raw and honest, the strip back stuff. And but also it was sonically raw. Like, it was just me and an SM7B in my kitchen, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, one takes. And I wanted it to be as live as possible. And so me and the guys, we rehearsed every song first and then brought it into the studio and tracked everything live as far as the bones of the songs. And then we just overdubbed like leads and slides and stuff. My friend Justin Johnson came in and played some like cigar box and slide guitar. And then my banjo player Gray came in and did some of that stuff. But everything else was recorded live. I didn't even have a click in my ear. Fred just held it down, so
yeah
that's awesome. And it's so interesting too, like hearing records and how they're made and then going back and listening to them from there. Honestly, for me, just it kind of seems like almost more meaningful, or like I think about it maybe even more, maybe not more meaningful, but I just like I tune in on that and kind of how you say you record it. So it's cool to get to do that. And a good mix of people that you've had in your world and probably some cats that you've met for the first time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was my first, you know, experience of that. And so
yeah,
I feel like I lucked out.
I love that.
That's really cool. And Nick was talking earlier today about being more purposeful about getting back to doing things in like in a more realistic and analog way. He's got some buddies that he's writing some handwritten letters to thank them for things.
Yeah.
And I think this is like the album equivalent of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's cool, man.
So, and I think that there's going to be a big push away towards, you know, it's like Disney is going to go back to some hand-drawn animations and stuff like that. So yeah. I think music-wise, where people are wanting to hear more stuff like that. So maybe that's part of the reason why this record's resonating so well with so many people.
Yeah, it's a weird time with you know, AI and everything. It's
brutal.
Really fucked. But I feel that too. I feel that this genre of like raw alt rock and country is just, people are hungry for it because it feels real and human.
Yeah.
And
it is real and human for sure.
Yeah.
Especially your writing. I'm like, damn, he's saying that? You know what I mean? He's singing that? Damn.
Yeah.
I think that when I think about where the world's going and how fast it's going, where it's going, right? Like the world is changing maybe faster than we've seen in our lifetimes, you
Absolutely.
Know, and probably faster than the lifetimes before that, realistically, just technology wise and what that is doing to culture. I mean, I find myself stuck in the wheel of social media, just, you know, I was even like on a car ride, and for the last hour of an 8-hour car ride, like I couldn't consume music anymore, and that's like my lifeline.
Yeah.
Then I was like, I found myself not looking at the screen but just scrolling on social media just to make my brain get through the last hour, and I'm like, man, I've polluted my brain so much that that's the thing. But all that to say, I think the antithesis of that, the other side of it, is the live music experience.
Yeah.
Like the real, true, gritty stories, which is what you have in your music.
In spades,
Yeah. And then also the experience that you can give to the people that are fans, right? Yeah. So on the road, can you take them on a journey? Like, you know what I mean? Like on the road, can you make them feel that sentiment and that part of your heart that you let out in your record, you know? And with 10 years on the road, you have you know exactly what to do there, even more than me as a fan. But, you know, as someone that is realistically a consumer of music, and that's where all of my stuff started, it's like, I think that's what's going to be the most meaningful moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
Is that live experience, the sound of truthfulness and grit in a record, and you just knowing and feeling more than even knowing that it is like real, raw, and, you know, made by what we are. So
yeah,
I love that.
That's the most special part of it's what drives me to do this, is what gives me breath, is singing live. And I always, it's just so special to me. Some, you know, a lot of people think you're just going out there and performing to a wall, basically a wall of people, but I really feel like it's a connection. Like, these songs changed my life, and they're about my life, but they found people that needed to hear them, and so I feel very connected to each audience. Every audience is different, even though it's the same songs, but I really try to remind myself every show that it's like this moment that we have together to, like, you know, I lived a lot of my life with walls up and just like suppressing my truth, and these songs broke those walls down, and it's like we get 90 minutes to tear our walls down together and experience the presence and truth together, and it's really special.
I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like your catalog also, it's not one that you can just go up and perform. You know, it's sort of like your writing and what you're singing about, and it's the things that you've lived. It's sort of like more than a performance of music. It's like you kind of have to go to that place or something. When I'm listening to this music, I'm like, it's hard to sing about this stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you don't just, it's not a flick of a switch. It's like you have to, like, almost like being part of it. It's like very cinematic or something. Like you have to go and be a part of that world. I don't know. It's like a lot emotionally, I would feel like, to play this music sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely heavy content, but yeah, it's just also the thing I love the most, and yeah. So going out there is it gives me life, you know. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but
I think also a lot of people know you from like your stripped back and bare bones kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and then but you were mentioning like some of the guys in the band, so like, what's your touring unit look like? What a live show.
We got this is five of us.
Okay.
I got Pat DeRossia on drums. He used to be in an active rock band, so he brings the rock and roll on the rhythm section. And then my aux player is John Gray. He does banjo, lap steel, and keys. And he also is a singer. He's in a bluegrass band, Downriver Collective.
Oh, cool.
And then Christian Sterrett is lead guitar. And then I have Luca Chiapora, Sicilian bass player, but he plays both upright and electric.
Very cool. And then you hold down the acoustic guitar duties.
Yeah, and I started playing electric. This tour, I just challenged myself to, like, you know, play rhythm, but also try and do some lead stuff. So
yeah, hell yeah.
I had to go get my amp repaired after this, but we've been throwing around some little spots for me to
step out a little bit.
Yeah, it's been
fun. Are you playing through?
A Fender Princeton 65.
Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got one at the house.
Hell yeah. my Transformer just blew.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
But
using real amps. That's very cool. Yeah. I haven't done that in a while.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I do for sessions and stuff in town, but like on the road we use like computer amps.
Yeah. Like
Quad Cortex is what I use. But it's like a Kemper or Axe FX or whatever. So that's cool. You're getting to use real amps. I'm envious.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. We busted our trailer. We had to get a new one because of all the weight.
the weight in the trailer. That's funny as heck. Well, we talked about, you know, the emotion that your music brings and like the part of your heart that you're kind of like leaving out there when you do it. Is there any experiences that you had from either fans, either online or at shows, that kind of like really sank home with you in the last like tour?
Yeah, I mean,
anything you'd be willing to share?
It happens all the time. I get a lot of messages about people, and it's amazing because it comes from all areas of life and all different types of issues. But a lot of people with like, the main message is your music helped get me through the darkest time of my life. And sometimes it's like it stopped me from ending my life, or it got me out of addiction. I'm in recovery, and you know, those messages are enough for me if my career ended today to know that, like, you know, I did my duty as a songwriter. But it just makes it even more special. I think that is what changed my life the most when I wrote Dipped in Bleach, because I was so specific and so honest about my story, and I was terrified to tell it. Like, so terrified, like, of what people were going to think of me. And then instead, I just met so many people who were going through the same type of thing, having the same dark feelings. And we, like, all found each other and, like, needed each other. And it was a really special moment. So it's, like, it's made me double down on just being honest, and because you just never know who needs to hear it. So
I love that. I think that's a big part of it. And I mean, realistically, this whole world is built on community, right? Yeah. And a live concert is you putting together a collective of people that all have something in mind. That's the same thing that they love, which is your music. So there's power in that. And there's power in the message that you having, or you putting into the world, having such a drastic effect on people. I love it.
And also, like, people online just put their best front face, you know, best self out there all the time with the filters, only posting their wins or whatever. And for you to be making a career off some of your lows, it's pretty inspiring.
I
can understand why that would be absolutely fucking terrifying, for sure, I think. But it's really helpful to people here, for other people to hear that they're not alone feeling some of this stuff.
Oh, and
other people fuck up too, you know, sometimes and come back from it.
Yeah, it's nice to be that voice.
Yeah.
And I think it was so liberating to, you know, I just lived a lot of my life just suppressing a lot of those, a lot of my feelings, good or bad, and a lot of the guilt I was feeling. Like, you know, I grew up religious, and so I just had all this, like, bottled up, like, didn't want to offend anybody, didn't want to rock the boat, and it was so liberating to just be able to speak my truth, like say, yes, I have I've made mistakes, and, you know, I think it helped me build a better relationship with myself and with those substances and things, and it was just very liberating.
I love that.
Yeah.
Man, it's the world is a journey, and each person's section through it is a journey, and it's cool to hear through your music as well as now getting to talk to you, like, some of that journey.
Yeah,
it's cool. You can tell that you are a person that is willing to discuss those things, which often isn't the case. Yeah. We do a lot of interviews, and significant amount of them are very top level, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just again talking about the highest highs, but with all those things come challenges.
Yeah.
And hearing music that has that, I think, is super meaningful.
And it's connecting with people. And yeah, you're getting to do a lot of cool shit, man. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you.
What about the tours you get, the dates that you have on the books currently? So we see a lot of overseas stuff, some festivals.
Yeah, headed back to Germany and the Netherlands. Yeah, we're doing the C2C series. And then we just got some other offers from, like, Sweden, and then... Mm. Yeah, right now all we have is festivals. Like, we got an offer in Texas and Oregon, but we're just trying to build around that with some regional headlining dates. The hard thing is we just toured the entire country.
Yeah.
In the fall, so we're trying to, you know, double back on the marks that did well and just keep building, but just got to be strategic about it because we just did it all.
Have you done European shows before?
Last year was our first UK and European mm-hmm. tour. And
was that C2C also or different?
We did the Long Road Festivals, and it was in Leicestershire, England. And then we did Sounds of Nashville in Germany.
Cool.
And then Under the Blue Moon in the Netherlands. All these, like, they're all under the same family as C2C. But
gotcha. I've done C2C probably four times or five. Like, I've done it so many times.
Yeah,
and it's awesome.
Wait.
Oh, it's sick. And the catering's really good. Yeah. And the crowd is, like, we were, the first time I did it, I think, was with Luke. And it was like, we were the second act of the, you know, we were the baby act. And they just knew all the words to the deep cuts and everything.
That's so sick.
And they all wear like hats like Knicks. You know, they're like, oh, this is my American hat, you know, yeah. Like the baseball hat or whatever. And so many good memories of doing those. You're gonna have a blast, man. They're gonna love you.
I can't wait. Yeah, this tour last year, we started the Man on Our tour in Ireland, and then
that seems perfect.
Yeah,
it does. It
I got Irish roots, but
go.
The audiences were just so passionate and, like, next level in some of those cities. Like, London was probably my favorite show ever.
Wow. Where in London did y'all play?
The Camden Assembly Hall. It's like a 200 cap club in Camden Town. But that was special for me because Amy Winehouse is probably one of my favorite artists ever, and, you know, she lived there and died there, but like, right across the street is Holly Arms, the bar she would frequent. There's, like, all wow. this Amy Winehouse set list and things, but I part of my set I do acoustic just to bring it back to the roots, and mm-hmm. in Camden Town I played Back to Black, and it was, everybody was just screaming and crying the song. It was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Wish I was there.
Yeah. That sounds like I want to be there right now.
Yeah.
No, I think that's so meaningful. And I mean, honestly, experiences like that where you get to do something special for that crowd, you know,
yeah.
that realistically isn't something you probably do at every show, you know. And
yeah.
even if you did do it at every show, it wouldn't have the impact that it had there. It's
yeah.
so cool.
It was one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. I love yeah. that.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
Is there anything that you would say is different about the overseas crowd in terms of, or comparatively to the US crowd that you've seen?
I think I've discovered it just ranges from city to city. Each city has like their own culture of how they experience live music, I feel like. I always have a really energetic and present crowd in like Montreal, Canada.
I love Montreal.
But also in Phoenix, Arizona, they're lit, like, yeah, and they're present. And but then some crowds are rowdy and like disrespectful, like, and then some crowds are very
listening room-esque. Yeah.
And it's every night is different. But I do feel like in the UK especially, they are very, very passionate music listeners. That I think they just, I think there's something about, you know, like the soul in the UK, like the darkness, like that Ireland and the UK have experienced, and they're just such old countries that music hits differently. Yeah. And that's what I felt playing in those crowds. But
I love that.
Yeah.
I remember playing in the UK, and we had Ash McBride opening up for us, and she was acoustic, and everyone was like dead silent. And then she would like finish a chorus or something, and everyone was just like, "Wow!" Like you could just feel like them like appreciate the music.
Yeah.
And then they were like, then the song, then they would go crazy, and then she would start talking, and they would just get really quiet. Like they just wanted as much of it as they can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, and then you play in Australia, and then they like they're sitting, and then after the song they go crazy,
and then they're drinking beers out of boots.
Yeah, yeah. True. Yeah. And there is a bit of a difference in the way the crowds are. I think.
Yeah.
I think that the more that we sort of become a more connected, you know, like the crowds are starting to feel more similar, maybe. But there's definitely a difference, which is fun. That's what's, you know, part of the fun of touring.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, you just never know. Like some cities, I just wasn't expecting the type of crowd, and then like, you know, Richmond, Virginia, I was like, "Wow, what's up, y'all?" Like, it was like a great night, and so you just never know, and it's hard to not have an expectation, and but you know, I try to go in every night with a fresh eyes, and mm-hmm. just. You know, share the moment with them.
That's the best part. I mean, yeah. Honestly, as like as a fan, it's like if you get that. That's what makes you want to come back to more shows.
Yeah,
you know, which is realistically like that's the goal of all of it. You know,
exactly.
Hit someone's heart in the right way. So make sure if you're in a 3-hour, 4-hour circle of them, they come back. Yeah. You know?
So what are some other stuff you're into, like besides doing this whole songwriter thing?
Well, so over the last 4 years, I've developed an obsession with Formula One.
Okay.
Heck yeah.
And my girlfriend for Christmas bought me the huge Formula One Lego set. So I started working on that last night. I've been gone visiting family and stuff, so I just got back, and I'm working on the Legos.
I grew up playing with Legos. I'm obsessed with. I think there's so much fun. And whenever my buddy Mark has a kid, and I always buy him Legos. His son loves aircraft, so and his dad's a firefighter. So I bought him this for a year. It's like a firefighter plane that like dumps water. Oh, like sick. It's so much fun.
Yeah, it was very. I just had Ray Charles playing on the vinyl, and yeah, and just like got lost for a couple hours.
Oh, isn't that so much fun?
Yeah.
Did you get in the Formula One thing from that Netflix show?
Yes.
Okay, I need to watch that because all my buddies that watch it are like, they immediately become like addicted to it.
Yeah, it's like reality TV, but you know, it's just following the racers, and it's just really interesting because they're all elite athletes and have like different mentalities, and it's like addicting to like get into their minds. And
And the cars go fast.
Very fast. That was one of my highlights of the European tour. We happened to have our day off on the day of the Grand Prix, and it was in the Netherlands. And my whole band went to Amsterdam. I went to, what was it, Zandvoort or something?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, Max Verstappen is my favorite.
Uh-huh, okay.
And he's from the Netherlands. And so it was this huge, huge Max Verstappen party, and it was the first time I saw these cars live, and I literally started crying when the one went by because it was so loud and just vibrating your chest. It was amazing.
I love that.
I mean, it's so funny. You like watch NASCAR, you know, which is what I'm used to. And it's like, as a kid, I was like, okay, they're going. And then my dad's always like, well, it's different in person, you know. And then we played the Daytona 500 a couple of times. And it is so much different in person. Those things are going fast, man. It's awesome. It's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, to feel the air move, you know, and the loud engines and everything. And also people watching, at least at NASCAR,
yeah,
you know, is probably as fun as watching the race itself.
Yeah.
I'm sure Formula One's a different kind of people watching.
But. I'm just thinking of what's that guy's name? Sacha Baron Cohen in Talladega Nights.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Hilarious. Well, I know you just dropped the last record in September, but have you been co-writing or writing by yourself for any new stuff recently?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to get into the studio this month or next to record a few songs. But
cool.
Yeah, I mean, now that I'm back, I got home. Yesterday was like the perfect day.
Let's hear about it. I want to hear all about it.
I woke up.
That's good. Good start.
Step one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had coffee and then I went and worked out, which I'm trying to lock in, doing dry January.
Hell yeah. Good for you.
And then I got back, took care of my house insurance, home insurance, got my talked to Fender, got my amp. They're going to fix it. And then I went into my studio, boom, wrote a song.
Yeah.
Then I went to Marty Supreme, watched a movie with my girl, and then did some Legos. It was a perfect day.
That's a great day, honestly.
What is Marty Supreme?
A movie.
It's the new Timothy Chalamet movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a location or something.
No.
Oh, gotcha. Our buddy Colby Acuff did a record where he went around and like interviewed people, and he was going to write a record based around strangers and each one of their stories. And then the more that he interviewed people, the more he realized that everyone's story is the same.
Yeah.
And so the record idea didn't, it changed. And so he was like, why don't you describe your perfect day? And mine was basically what you said, wake up, drink coffee, you know, play some guitar, hang out with my friends, you know, hang out with my girlfriend. And what you're saying, that's so, it's so simple.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, enjoy the small things, you know, have your passions that you live for, your music, and then play with Legos.
Yeah.
You know, and hit the gym. You know what I mean? Like, that makes your brain feel real good.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something about when you get to experience things like you are, which is, you know, grandiose experiences, mm-hmm. like getting to play the Opry and being overseas and people connecting to your music, that makes the simple, regular things in life seem as meaningful as those things, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm really happy to be back in Nashville for a couple months. But, you know, obviously touring, I could do it every day if my voice would let me. But it's really nice to be planted for a while. I bought my house last year, so it's nice to be start pouring money into it.
Yeah. In time.
That's how it works.
And energy.
Yeah. You talked about a little bit about like your voice. Is there anything that you have to do like on the road between shows or when you have like long stretches of shows to like kind of take care of that?
Yeah, well, I have a voice coach, Chanel Guyton, and she has taught me a lot about my voice and how to control it and keep it healthy. And so I have all these weird warm-ups and therapy sessions that I do every day.
The blowing in the straw thing. And
I do the straw every single day, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, like, we oftentimes will have, like, you know, younger artists that listen to our podcast, and that's one of the things I preach and Kurt has taught me to preach is, like, just make sure you take care of your gift.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And develop it and work on it.
Yeah.
You know, guitar players, we practice all the time. And then I, you know, meet a lot of artists and it's like, they want to do this for a living. It's like, well, take it fucking seriously. You know what I mean?
Man.
Get a vocal coach.
Exactly.
I'm like, a lot of people in Nashville can't sing like you. You know? So it's like, time to practice there, bud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't just ride on talent. You gotta develop it and apply it. So.
Yeah. I love that.
I know, like, when I first started touring with Luke, it was like, we were hanging out and then, all right, let's go on stage. And I was like, okay. Like, and then he just sang every note perfectly all the time. And I'm like, this guy's a freak. You know, then it was like, you know, we're in Europe for a while or we're touring a lot. And then it's like, it starts to get harder to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Then the warm-up started coming. Then, yeah. What's that kind of use that YouTube channel or whatever, where it's like he put the piano.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, so now he's doing that. And yeah. And we're all, you know, all the guys in the band do it, that same. I don't, so I just like chill, but I don't sing in the band. But
Chanel made, she was smart. She had me voice memo all of our lessons. So I've got like hours and hours of like exercises where I can get better, or like vocal therapy if I'm losing my voice, and pre-warm up stuff. So I annoy the band every show 30 minutes before the set.
You know what? I mean, you're paying them, so
yeah absolutely.
I think they would rather that than your voice go out and then them not get a show pay.
So. Yeah, man, I was so thankful. I didn't miss a single show. I didn't get sick this whole tour. It was just very grateful that wasn't an issue.
And also, it's like you owe it to the fans, I feel like, take care of yourself, right? To go out and just kick ass.
Yeah.
And your sound is based around your incredible voice, and people want to hear it live, so you kind of have to be able to do that. Yeah. You know, it's like Stapleton. Like, he travels with a voice coach also.
Yeah.
Like, he tours with one.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, too. It's like you are sacrificing maybe staying up too late with your friends, and you know what I mean?
A couple pre-show beers or whatever, you know?
To make sure that you're giving those people that have been looking forward to that the best experience possible.
Yeah, you always got to keep that at the front of mind, especially on tour, because tour can get fun, you know? So
You're screaming too much at the race car race.
Yeah.
You know? Woo, go Max!
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. But, no, man, thanks for taking time to come and chat it up with us.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
I haven't been to your show, but if you guys make a Nashville one, I'd definitely make it to it.
Yeah, well, we just played the Beast in September, but we'll probably hit one up again in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the Beast. Love your music, man. It's been good chatting with you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's a pleasure, boys.
We appreciate it, brother. All right, guys. Well, that was the Rage Rowdy Podcast.
Go follow him, and obviously you probably already follow him, but go check him out, and we'll see you guys in the front row. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Cheers. Cheers.